I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of The Front Three. My name is Adam Bulwood. Joining me as always is Lawrence McKenna.
Hey, how you doing?
Fantastic. And we also have the Statman Supreme, the one and only David O'Brien.
Hi, chaps.
Wonderful to have you here, guys, on this beautiful Wednesday evening when England have just completed a 100% qualifying record for Euro 2016. They're on the way to France. They beat Switzerland 2-0. Wayne Rooney is now the all-time highest England goalscorer of all time ever in history. He's beat Bobby Charlton, who was on 49 goals. Scored a penalty, Dave, which I'm sure you'll agree is a fitting way to have broken the record.
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah, he scored, what is it? So his last two goals, the 48th and the 49th, have both come from the spot. Wayne Rooney's now scored seven in seven competitive games in a row, and that's a post-war record. So Wayne has broken a lot of records.
Yeah.
He has indeed. He has indeed. But Lawrence, I mean, the obvious debate here is about Wayne Rooney. Does he deserve to have beaten that record? People are saying he scored these goals against less than stellar teams. You know, he's sort of, do you know what I mean? It's kind of a, it feels unfair to Wayne Rooney, I think, to criticise him.
I'm not sure that the criticism is of the achievement. I think it's of the things that maybe go along with that. Maybe he should be open to criticism at times as a public figure, through some of the things that have been rumoured to have been done by him. Although, again, that's a very personal judgment on someone who, you know, probably is more famous for things that aren't, you know, in the spotlight for that reason. So, you know what? I've said it time and time again. It's how the person leaves you feeling and not necessarily the things they've done. And I think with Wayne Rooney, that's probably why we have a very different feeling between Bobby Charlton and Wayne Rooney. But I think Wayne Rooney, to some extent, you know, he does leave you sort of feeling a bit underwhelmed sometimes, but then sometimes people are overwhelmed by him. So,
I mean, do you think that has something to do with, obviously, most of Wayne Rooney's goals haven't come in major tournaments. They've come in these qualifying rounds, these qualifying stages.
He was pretty good in some other things. I mean, every time someone says, oh, he didn't deliver there, there's always something else to argue, well, he did deliver there.
Well, I'd say, tell me a major tournament he's delivered in. There wasn't Euro 2004 when he first burst onto the scene and was, you know, a very exciting player and people were, you know, people were building.
Before he got injured would be the thing at most tournaments, right? Or when he wasn't injured.
He's been to three World Cups, 2006, 2010, 2014. They're all disappointments.
Yes, but not necessarily because just of Wayne. Fabio Capello's team was just in general pretty fucking knackered by the time they got to the tournament, weren't they? and I think, you know, there are other things that you can defend Wayne for. I guess it's that constant feeling of things not coming together or unfulfilled kind of potential there with Wayne Rooney and the kind of the love-hate relationship that a lot of people have with him, because he does just say some really dickish things sometimes. Or he comes across as a bit of a dick. But not even just in an almost ignorant way, not in a kind of like he looks down on people. There are not some glowing endorsements if you go back to Liverpool of Wayne Rooney as a character. But again, that's another personal judgment. But that's part of it, is that Bobby Charlton, on and off the pitch, a lot of people are going to feel represented. But then
was Wayne a gentleman. Rooney,
Well, Wayne Rooney's possibly lost out because he was on the cusp of a millennial generation who were the first on social media, the first to be encountering the new massive sets of globalized money that comes around. And, you know, we had people before him who set him up to earn that money, but they maybe, you know, took away from his character at the same time.
Dave, what do you make of criticism of Rooney? What I'm trying to get at is people are criticizing the achievement in many ways because they feel like it's unwarranted.
Yeah.
So, for example, like Rooney, he scored one goal in 11 appearances at the World Cup. He's sort of, there's an accusation that he's perhaps like a flat track bully in many ways. You know, he scored 5 goals against San Marino. He scored 3 against Kazakhstan. But I mean, these are the teams that are up against him. As people always say, you know, you can only beat what's put in front of you.
Well, I think what you obviously can say about Wayne Rooney is that he hasn't sort of lifted England to win the World Cup or to win the European Championships. And that was his potential. You know, obviously Bobby Charlton did lift the World Cup and it's a big thing. You know, you look at the World Cup in 2010, Rooney scored 9 goals in qualifying, only one behind top scorer. Sorry about that, chaps.
Oh.
Behind the top scorer in qualifying. But then when he went to the tournament, England were absolutely awful. They got booed off the pitch, if you remember. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where Rooney has...
Nice to see your own fans booing you.
It's fact, isn't it? It's fact that Wayne Rooney hasn't delivered at the top stage in for England, really.
I mean,
and look, at times for United.
Yeah, and at times for Man United, definitely.
Is it a bit far to say Wayne Rooney is the greatest England striker of all time?
Yeah, absolutely. But just because you get a record does not make you the greatest striker of all time. And that's why that it harks back to the point I made at the beginning of the conversation. It's how people make you feel. People remember a number of strikers for a number of reasons, and it's not just going to be because they set great records. The problem is, in the past, people only really lived through their records because it was very difficult to record the other things that they did on the pitch because people only saw them. Now people live through the videos and all those kind of things that go on, and that's what I'm saying is that he's the first of that generation who'll live through that probably.
Do you think the truth is, as always, is somewhere in the middle of, you know,
I think he's done something huge and achieved something massive.
Yeah,
but that doesn't make him the goat. The greatest of all
no,
time.
That doesn't make him. It doesn't make him the greatest of all time. But also, I feel like the criticism Wayne Rooney gets is in turns a little bit unfair. It's what we've sort of been talking about for a few weeks now. When we mention Wayne Rooney, we talk about the potential, we talk about the hype.
I'm just almost younger. Bored of it. Like, I don't care if he's the greatest of all time. He's a fantastic talent. He's clearly got a lot of things going for him on the football
probably
pitch.
Probably the best England player of his generation, arguably.
It's hard to say what is his generation because, I mean, if you look, who else is in his generation? I mean, who are we saying there? Are we saying like
Milner?
Aaron that Lennon?
That type of generation?
No, it's
Defoe?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
look at the same. Is he the same age as those guys?
He's 29, isn't he? And Defoe, I think Defoe's about 30-ish.
Yeah, so I'd have put him slightly behind that generation. Bentley. He's David Bentley's generation.
Yeah, exactly. Done more than him. I think he'll go down as the player that is the jack of all trades, master of zero positions, and that's going to be Wayne Rooney. I think he's moved around a bit too much in his career. He's never really taken a role on. Like, if you were to, how would you describe Wayne Rooney as a footballer?
Isn't that the interesting thing, though, Dave? Is that there's a lot of people who I guess you can almost define the way that you watch your football by the way that you watch and define Wayne Rooney.
I think that's, you know, I've seen him sort of, you know, 2011, sorry, 10-11, you know, he was a number nine, you know, where he played his best football and everyone sort of thought that that was his best position. But then later, obviously, after that, he played number 10 behind Javier Hernandez and Berbatov and stuff where he looked very, very good. I think that's the issue. Whenever Wayne Rooney plays one position, everyone goes, okay, but he could play this other position better. And I think that is sort of, that is the Wayne Rooney syndrome in a way where it's always, there's something else for him.
I sort of feel a little bit, so, you know, he's almost almost the Manchester United all-time top goal scorer.
Yep.
Maybe he's up there in the appearances list, surely now.
Yep.
But obviously there's the mitigating circumstances in terms of he's tried to leave the club twice.
Exactly.
He hasn't exactly endeared himself to those supporters. But in terms of England, it just feels he's achieved a great deal, but he's not beloved by England fans. I don't know whether that's a symptom of his club career or whether...
Well, I guess that's part of the problem. You can't say, I mean, this is the criticism that is levelled at so many people who just look at the statistics. And people say, I mean, you know, I remember when we first started doing Football Daily, people would say, oh, don't listen to Dave, he only does statistics. But that was the point was, all right, if you just want to look at the stat and you just go, oh, yeah, well, they scored a goal. Great. They won. Then fine, go ahead. That's your football. And some people will, for that reason, say he's the greatest of all time. But there are going to be other people who say, well, let's look at what goes on behind that. And that's where Dave comes in. And that's the point, is that if you look beyond the records and all those other things, then you see something that's incredibly underwhelming, leaves people feeling angry, leaves people feeling slightly shortchanged. But that's not just Wayne Rooney.
This leads us on perfectly to look beyond the records, look beyond Wayne Rooney and look at the team. So looking at England, their qualifying record, 100% leading into Euro 2016. Looking at other teams who've had 100% qualification records, we're looking at the likes of France in Euro 1992, Czech Republic, Euro 2000, France, Euro 2004, Germany, Euro 2012, and Spain, Euro 2012 as well. Having a 100% qualifying record doesn't actually count for a lot. When you look at, out of all those teams, Spain are the only ones who've gone on to win it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually, although, I mean, how impressive an achievement is this, is what I'm trying to get at. You know, obviously we've been in a group with Lithuania and San Marino and all that sort of stuff. So is it that impressive?
And also Switzerland. I mean, you know, if England were to draw these final few, that would then become a disappointment to some extent. And then Marcus Speller, I was with today, was making the point, Roy looks very stressed when they're playing Switzerland, because England will find it very hard to break down Switzerland. And when they're actually challenged with something, they didn't look fantastic. They looked all right. And he's also got the friendlies with, is it Germany, France, and... there's one other name in there, but they've got three teams there having friendlies against where Roy will really test himself. And that's where we'll see how well they'll do.
They literally have won every single game, Lawrence.
Yeah, I don't, it's so fucking wild. And like, look at that group.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying to get. I want you to tell me.
So yeah, it doesn't mean anything, because we know when England gets to the tournament, then there's other stuff, there's other factors in there. But we know that
exactly,
this is a fantastic
squad.
Exactly, that's
what I'm
trying to get. So look at,
I wanted
look
to
at
get
Kane.
Right, that?
Look at Kane, look at Oxlade-Chamberlain, like, look at Walcott, look at Sterling, look at all those guys who are fantastic players. But we don't know where they're going to be come the end of the season. I mean, they could have had a fantastic Champions League winning season, one of those sets of players. But then you've got a fantastic goalkeeper just behind them in Joe Hart, and you know, a number of really great things. But that's not to say that other teams don't have the same. I mean, look at that Germany team.
Look at the Spain team.
Mike Lawrence, the teams who are there, is the real challenge for England, not this qualifying group. Is it potentially the friendlies where they're playing Spain, France in November, playing Germany in March? Is that going to be maybe a little bit more of a test, a bit more of a measure of how they're going to do in the Euros?
Yeah, that'll definitely be more of a test, but still, you know, we're already getting hyped up about them having a 100% record in the group, and now we're going to go to these friendlies with Spain, with France, with Germany. And quite frankly, you know, if we do get a draw or we do nick a win here, it's not going to be to do with the, you know, we're not going to dominate these games. That's what I'm trying to say here. England are going to go to the sort of tournament, and they should be as this underdog. You know, you look at the Spain squad, it's ridiculous. You look at the France squad, it's a lot better than the England squad. And then the German squad, it's all a lot better than England. The quality in those squads is, you know, sevenfold. You think about those Spain players, how many England players could get in that Spain team? How many England players could get in the France team? How many England players could get in the German team? It's this thing where we've got to compare ourselves like that, and I still think we have no philosophy. We've got a coach that's, you know, he doesn't have a philosophy either, and it's an issue.
I like it. A damning judgment.
It's just saying it's going to take a lot of things falling into place, whereas other people don't seem to be leaving it so much down to chance.
Okay, so looking at it then, you know, we're looking past the qualifiers, looking past the friendlies. Obviously, us, the three of us, I don't think we rate England's chances very highly in the actual tournament itself, perhaps not unfairly. There's also a perception in the last few years, there has been a perception in England itself. There's been almost a... Usually you think the public are right behind England. There's a sort of this over-optimistic view of how England are going to do in tournaments, but there is a bit more realism creeping in ever since that 2010 World Cup failure. That there is a bit more pragmatism about it. We can all sort of take a step back and go, okay, England are pretty shit. So we're not expecting a lot out of Euro 2016, are we?
No, I think we should. I think, you know, the expectation should be, there should be some expectation there. Because the expectation is different to, you know, the expectation should be, come on, let's go and do something here. That's not to say that England shouldn't therefore go and do something. It's just to say, look, when they don't, or if they don't, then, you know, don't be too surprised. But the problem is that almost keeps them in the purgatory. England are in somewhat of a football purgatory right now, I think, because they don't quite know how to get to the next place, but they are definitely not out of the last place. And they, I mean, to some extent, that's partly the problem of Rooney, is what would this England team look like? What kind of shape would it have if Rooney wasn't in it? And you've got to say, it would be quite an exciting shape.
Fast, a different
kind of football?
Obviously, yeah. We're a long way away. Who knows what's going to happen over the course of the season? But what would you say is the best sort of lineup, the best sort of setup for England going into the tournament next summer? Is it Wayne Rooney up front?
11 players.
Kane up front?
Definitely.
No, is it two up front? Is it Wayne Rooney up front as the figurehead? What would you say, in your opinion, is the best sort of setup that Hodgson needs to be looking at?
It's going to be, you know, it's just, you're going to have to play on the counter-attack, I think, and that's where the pace comes in. Like, the likes of Sterling, Walcott and Chamberlain are going to be absolutely massive. I think you'd play maybe Chamberlain on the right and then maybe Fabian Delph on the left, John Joe and whoever's going to be in the middle. I think the defence isn't really good enough, but I think you've got to go to these big games. You've got to sit back and you've got to hit them with explosive pace. You know, the European teams, Spain and Germany, they always fear Theo Walcott. They always fear someone that's really, really quick. And that is what we've got to play with, really. You know, Ross Barkley's quite good on the counter-attack as well. That's kind of what we've got to do. We've got to soak up the opposition's possession and then hit them on the break. But then you look at our defence, is that good enough? Is Gary Cahill and Chris Smalling going to have as good seasons as they had last season? You know, there's massive, like Lauren said, there's massive question marks between now and at the end of the year. But, you know, there's always hope.
There is always hope. Not massive hope, but I mean, as we say. Lawrence, what do you think is the one main area that England need to work on, that Roy Hodgson needs to be looking at over the course of these friendlies in order to improve for that tournament? Is it up front with Harry Kane potentially coming in as the main man alongside Rooney? Is it midfield where we've got problems? Is it the back? We've got people like Cahill, Smalling, Jagielka as our main, you know, our main defenders.
That's fine. I do feel like it's partly the pace of England's play. I do find it a little bit pedestrian at times. I mean, very often you find that they have to switch the ball to be able to get across a side, and the ball just doesn't move fast enough. Mm. And you just sort of think, but you know what? You'd be a way more effective side. And there are runs being made which, you know, almost should be unlocking defences, but they're not, because the ball's not moving fast enough. I'm not talking about physics here. I'm talking about, you know, actually just moving the ball around the pitch faster and having a bit more control of it over that. There just seems to be a lot of sleeping on the ball sometimes. I mean, within a couple of seconds tonight, I think within a couple of minutes tonight, you know, it was Jonjo Shelvey was caught on the ball by one of the Swiss players. You know, there's so many times you sort of look and you think, you know what, there's a reason why they're doing well against this smaller side, because the smaller team doesn't have to deal with the England movement, but against the bigger sides, they can just soak up that movement and they're fine. And that's the problem, I think, is that in midfield, and that's why Jonjo Shelvey was actually quite good when he finally lit things up, because the ball that he has quite incisive balls. And so, you know, it was interesting to watch in the end, because he was sort of feeding it out to the people who sort of sat at almost like at a 45 degree angle out from him, and that made it quite exciting. So at times when the ball moves quickly, and that's great. But I mean, it's the same things that people seem to be levelling at Hodgson every time he's at every club, is that they get a little bit bored of the football. The methods are slightly old, and therefore it doesn't motivate the players to the same level. And, you know, things look fine, but they don't look revolutionary, or they do not look to the level where they're going to make you as savvy as another set of players. And therefore you're almost relying on some of the key individuals out on the pitch to do things. And that doesn't always happen. And that's the problem, is that you know, look at the other teams, is, you know, when you think about them relying on key individuals, you're really saying, well, it's those key individuals then unlocking the strengths of a side.
So England, obviously now qualified, looking elsewhere around Europe, France, obviously, have automatically qualified as the hosts for the tournament. Czech Republic.
They did well there.
They did well. Czech Republic have also joined them the sixth straight European Championship after their win over Latvia. Mm. It's their sixth win from their opening eight matches. We've also got Iceland, who had now secured qualification.
Tiny Iceland.
Pulled off a double against Netherlands. We'll come on to them.
A double. Let's just say that. a double.
Mad. We've also got Austria as well, the final team who have now already secured qualification. They hammered Sweden 4-1. So they're top of Group G at the moment. Other teams who are sort of looking to qualify have got Wales, who are actually unbelievably, in many ways, above England in the FIFA World Rankings.
Didn't
now.
Mean anything, but
they haven't qualified. Sorry, what were you saying?
Doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. I mean, really, right, it doesn't. Sure, I mean, World Rankings don't really mean anything, do they? I mean, especially in the UEFA coefficient.
Top of Group B at the moment. They dropped points against Israel, but they are in a good position to qualify, Dave.
They're in an amazing position.
Yeah,
but they're not there yet. But they are in a very strong position.
Yeah, I think they've got to pick up 1 point or 2 points or 3 points, yeah, something like that. Not a lot. Mm-hmm. And if they win one of their last two games, they're through. It'd be a lovely story, wouldn't it? And you see the likes of Bale and Aaron Ramsey being the two main men, and then all the other players sort of being functional around that. But no, it's good.
Don't forget Gary Speed in there as well. Yeah.
I'm surprised about, like, you know, is it Chris Coleman's manager? He wasn't that good at Fulham, but he's sort of done very well with Wales national
team. He's picked up from a wonderful basis that was built. Yeah.
Yes. They're away at Bosnia Herzegovina next in October, and they're at home to Andorra. So you'd have to
expect them for a point there, eh?
Yeah, they'd have to expect to qualify, which is fantastic.
Well, Bosnia are doing fantastic. I mean, Bosnia are a great side, so.
Elsewhere around Europe, the Netherlands are struggling, as I mentioned there. Austria have qualified automatically from their group, but Netherlands beaten by Turkey. They're sort of struggling to... I mean, Dave, what have you seen in Lebanon? Where is it all going wrong for them at the moment? Because they could squeak in into that third place, that sort of playoff place to qualify, but they've missed out on automatic promotion as it stands.
I think there's a few too many questions at the moment with this Netherlands team. You know, who's the main striker? Who's the main creative midfielder? Is they going to play a midfield three with an inverted tip or a defensive midfielder? You know, the defence isn't as good as they were performing at the World Cup. You know, obviously Van Gaal played that really dodgy system, the 3-5-2. Everyone moved away from that back to the traditional 4-3-3. But just seems a bit, it's all wrong at the moment for Netherlands. Obviously, Hiddink was in charge, wasn't he? And then he got sacked. And now Danny Blind has been, you know, probably will get sacked as well after the tournament. But I think that
it's harsh on him, though, isn't it?
A little bit, but they should be beating a team of Turkey's quality. You know, Turkey have Arda Turan, Calhanoglu, and Turfan in midfield, a youngster that's coming through. They're not that good. And they've turned over a team with, you know, Van Persie, Schneider. That may be the question, that they're not moving on yet. They haven't moved on from that last generation.
Yeah, exactly. The first two names that you put out there as well. I mean, there are stories about Schneider and Van Persie as just divisive characters within that squad. And it's strange when they get together that things disintegrate at times. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, you know, that's probably why Van Gaal was such a great guy to bring them all together, was because, you know, it was almost rally around a cause that is, you know, if you all do this, we'll all get something out of it, you know. And it's a bit strange because so often the culture in that country has been based around individuals basically shouting their own praises. And that's a bit much, I think. Too many people who want to be Cruyff.
Yeah,
who want to be Cruyff.
That's the story of the Netherlands this season.
Did you guys catch the Memphis Depay put? I think they put four cracking balls in the box.
Yeah, I think I saw that on your Squawker Facebook day.
Didn't put any of them away. Crazy.
Scotland Lawrence as well. Things are not looking too rosy for them. Beaten by Germany 3-2 at Hampden Park, but, you know, they're probably not going to qualify, are they?
What Strachan has done with that side is pretty incredible, to even get into that position to play Germany in the first place and be doing that.
Gave them a good game as well.
It gave them a fantastic game. I think tactically, Strachan's brought them together to a point where it's not basic, but they have a very clear game plan. And, you know, there's no shame in that, actually. I think that's something that a lot of people don't extol the virtues of, especially when it comes down to these teams who need to get the best out of individuals who probably aren't the same standard as, you know, at the Germany side. And then he knows who his players are that he can trust, the core players, and then he's literally kept a very similar squad throughout. and then rotated a couple of names in, and then the names that he brought in this time, Griffiths, etc., were the kind of guys that you thought, well, yeah, he's bringing those guys back, and you could see exactly why. He's been very clear with the Scottish media. I think he's really rallied everyone around that side. And the best thing about them is that they've not tried to play beyond their means within this, and therefore been exploited. If anything, they've exploited sides who took Scotland for granted at times, and they've gone out there and got some results which have put them so close to the top of the group that they could still get third. And it would be lovely if Scotland got that third place playoff. And I think that I was listening to the Ramble earlier in the, nice. Earlier in the week, and they were saying Scotland, it would be typical of Scotland get that third place playoff. Who do they meet? Probably the Netherlands. and then, yeah, what do you do from there?
They'll be in trouble. Well, maybe not.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Moving on then to looking ahead to the actual tournament itself. So we sort of almost discounted England there earlier. But who do we think is actually going to... Who's got a chance of actually winning the whole thing? Obviously Germany, the World Cup winners. They're probably up there. France... As the host nation up there, but it's been expanded to 24 teams. So Dave, who do you think is going to be up there to win that tournament?
Well, I definitely think those two. In terms of the final, that's pretty much written already, is it not? Spain versus Germany. Germany have looked really, really good. Thomas Muller has been on absolutely fire this season. He's played 5 games, scored 8 goals, and got 3 assists this season for club and country. So he's sort of the main man. He's playing from that right hand side again. Germany have got great fluidity. Against Scotland, we saw interchanging positions between Ozil, Gundogan, Muller, and Mario Götze. You know, with the backup of Bastian Schweinsteiger and Toni Kroos in midfield, Emre Can at right back. You know, they've got so much quality there. Similarly, Spain.
I was about to ask you about Spain. So this is the team who they crashed out of Brazil the World Cup last year. What has changed for them between then and now? Because obviously in Group C they haven't had much of a challenge in terms of teams like Slovakia, Ukraine, and they're with them. Do they not still have that weakness up front? They still lack, obviously Diego Costa's there, but they not lack a bit of firepower?
I think Diego Costa's been pretty poor since he, you know, moved over to Spain. He's not been great. I watched a game with, I think it was Slovenia. Was it Slovenia this weekend? A great, great pass from David Silva to Jordi Alba. They scored a penalty, Iniesta. But, Diego Costa didn't look too great. Obviously, the issue that we have with Spain, sometimes they can be a bit too narrow. I think if Navas does retain his position for Man City, that he could be that, you know, wide outlet for them. You know, you've still got Pedro in there. They've still got such quality, and you know that they're just a tournament team. They can just turn it on. Sorry, it was actually Slovakia that they played on Saturday. Apologies. Okay, but, yeah, I do think that they potentially do lack something up front if Diego Costa doesn't get back to that form that we saw last season.
I want to talk very briefly about a little bit of transfer news before we move on to talk about. I thought it was a little bit interesting because the window's only been closed for a week.
Yeah,
the rumour mill is already beginning to gear up, which seems almost unbelievable, but it has. So the big rumour this week, Lawrence, which I want to ask you about, because I think you know you're going to enjoy this, is Riyad Mahrez from Leicester City.
Yeah,
joined for something like $500,000.
Yeah,
right.
Liverpool $15,000.
He's on his way to Barcelona, Lawrence. Barcelona are weighing up a swoop, no less, for Leicester City attacker Riyad Mahrez, seeing as Pedro has moved to Chelsea. This is a potential replacement. What do you make of that?
I would say it's early, but I would also say, what?
Don't I say the Daily Mail have made it up?
No, you know what? I'm going to say this is the one move that has to happen this January. It is vital to all clubs within Europe that it happens. If it doesn't happen, the economy may collapse. And what we are finding there is that we are we'll go into the final days of the Mar resolution.
Very well said. Now, Dave, let me come to you with this bit of transfer gossip. This is a little bit more legitimate in many ways. So before the transfer window closed, Seamus Coleman was being linked for a move to Paris Saint-Germain. Now, apparently that move isn't dead. PSG are going to come back for him in January, according to the Daily Mirror, of all sources. I mean, on the face of it, this looks slightly ridiculous, but maybe it makes sense, Dave.
Yeah, I don't know. Who do they just bought? They bought the lad from Monaco at left-back, and then they've got Sergio Aurier, or whatever he's called, at right-back. So they're pretty good at full-back at the moment.
You say the Daily Mirror made this up as well, Dave?
Maybe. They might have done, but... You know, Seamus can play on both sides. He could be a good squad player for them. He's a good goal-scoring fullback.
Let me come to the final bit of transfer news then, because there might be some truth in this. So, Isco.
Yeah.
Real Madrid.
Yeah. If you say Spurs,
I'm not saying Spurs. But this is a player that Real Madrid fans love.
Yeah.
Right. But he's sort of got...
He's got his price, hasn't he?
He's got his price. He hasn't got like an obvious place in there. He's not undroppable. Ronaldo. He's not, you know, Benzema, the number one striker.
Whatever. Is probably the biggest,
Juventus.
No.
They're coming in for Isco.
This is like deal or no deal, isn't it?
23 years old. Yeah. He's decided he's going to leave the club due to a lack of opportunities.
Will Real Madrid set him 23?
Manchester City are also long-term admirers. Are you telling me that AS have made this up, Lance?
I think they've made some of it up, but I think I don't know which bits. We all know that agents are pretty much the moment that the transfer window closes, they start calling people and going, "You never guess what." I would say it would be a fantastic move for someone like Juventus. Really amazing to see what they would do with him in that formation. Although...
Well, Lawrence...
You are worried about Allegri at the moment.
Well, you know, they have conceded 3 goals this season and only scored 1. They've lost both their games. They're currently playing at a 3-5-2. You know, the diamond isn't there at the moment.
Isn't it, Dave?
So it's going to... I think this Isco move is on. You know, put your money on it.
100%.
Need some creativity, don't they?
Yes. Wrap up the legitimate, very well-sourced transfer news there. Let's put an end to it there.
Well, while we're on transfers, though, Adam, there was that interesting report, wasn't there, this week?
Lawrence, let me move on to it after the break.
Oh, come on.
Let the people wait for it. This amazing nugget that's coming up.
I think you've just over-egged that one, but all right.
Right. So, Lawrence, listen, I think this is a fantastic talking point that you want to bring up here.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
We all heard. I mean, if you want to release a report, then what you want the report to have is a big headline, which is going to basically everyone go, wait a minute.
Wow.
And this one was, and it was a good one, overpriced players. And everyone goes, hold on a minute. We can actually find out if someone is overpriced. And they go, well, it is only a report. And people go, shut up, I'm reading the report. Right? Now, Benteke is allegedly the third most overpriced transfer this summer. Anyone else want to take a guess at the other two?
Overpriced.
Okay, I mean, 32 million sounded reasonable, but that's maybe the market we're in, Adam.
Okay, obviously, Anthony Martial. Come on.
Good. He's in.
Yeah, thank you.
Good guess. He was number one.
That's the obvious one.
He was number one, the most overpriced this summer, is what people are saying.
I honestly couldn't tell you number two. I couldn't. Please tell me. Please enlighten.
Dave, take a wild freaking guess.
Maybe someone City bought?
Yes, but is it Sterling or is it De Bruyne?
Ooh.
You know, if I was stupid and I'd written the report and Kevin De Bruyne was overpriced, I'd probably rip the report and start again, to be honest, mate. But is it De Bruyne?
It is De Bruyne, Dave. You win. You're a stupid idiot.
I am an idiot. Biggest idiot around.
Because what you don't have to acknowledge is that then Sterling, allegedly, according to the report, is underpriced.
Let's set this out then, Lawrence. So what you're saying is there's a report by the CIES, Football Observatory.
Yeah.
And what they're saying is they've released a report on the top 10 overpriced footballers from the summer and also the top 10 underpriced footballers, absolutely, right? So let me run through the list of the top 10 overpriced, just for the uninitiated. So they've gone for number one, Anthony Martial. Number two, Kevin De Bruyne, who we just said there, maybe unfairly. Number three, Christian Benteke. Number four, Angel Di Maria. Number five, Arda Turan. Number six, Nicolas Otamendi. Number seven, Alessio Romagnoli, Roma to AC Milan. We've got eight, Amin Adembayor. I probably said that wrong. Nine, Petr Cech.
Petr Cech. Because Petr Cech, I mean, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because what is Petr Cech therefore valued at?
And 10, Ivan Perisic, Wolfsburg to Inter Milan. That is an interesting list. I'd love to know, like, what exactly have they based it on? Because, like, I look at a lot of the CIES Football Observatory stuff. They seem to know what they're talking about, but this list just seems a little bit...
Well, Dave disagrees. Dave's lips disagree.
I always enjoy their list. I think they've got, you know, I always look at when they value the players. They always look at the, you know, they give a market value to a player. And it seems pretty, you know, seems pretty accurate. But this seems a little bit off.
I don't know. So they do, the factors, let's say, the key indicators is age, position, contract, international status, experience, performance, achievements, results, competition level. Okay, you're thinking, oh, pretty decent. That's what I'd use. They're all the factors I would use. And then you go to their list of most valuable players from last season. So what they're, how they're working out these overpriced, underpriced values is they are using their predicted value of the player, and then they're taking off the actual fee. So number one of their you know, highest value player is Lionel Messi. We can't argue with that. Brilliant. You know, that's expected. Any model would tell you that. But number two is Eden Hazard.
Oof.
So Eden Hazard is ranked above Sergio Aguero, Neymar, Cristiano Ronaldo, Luis Suarez.
Seems legit.
I just
are you telling me that Hazard isn't worth more than Neymar? Is that what you're saying?
I think I might be saying that. I'm considering that a player that's never scored 20 goals domestically isn't worth as much as Neymar, who scored a shitload of goals last year.
A shitload.
I believe that was actually how they were measured as well.
So, it almost becomes... Although that is very interesting about Anthony Martial, yeah, Kevin De Bruyne, is he overpriced? Where it actually becomes interesting is having Raheem Sterling is number one.
Underpriced.
The top 10 of underpriced footballers this summer.
How underpriced was he, though? That's my question.
Raheem Sterling's value was 73.7 million to 81 million. Exactly. So his value was above Diego Costa, Alexis Sanchez, James Rodriguez, Luis Suarez, Antoine Griezmann, Cesc Fabregas, Isco, Harry Kane, Gareth Bale. Wait a second. Harry Kane is valued more than Gareth Bale on this list. And brilliant. Coutinho is valued more than Toni Kroos.
What are you talking about?
What's your problem, Dave? I don't know what your problem is.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Are you saying that this list is, I don't know, bollocks?
Maybe, Lawrence. Maybe I don't.
Is it just a different kind of scale, Dave? A scale that maybe you're not used to.
But do you think, like, I've seen people say, for example, Football Daily, the channel I used to work with, they were saying that Raheem Sterling was a bargain this summer, and that caused a lot of contention in the comments. People saying, "What are you talking about? You know, 49 million, absolutely ridiculous. Say he's a bargain." People saying after those first three games of the season that Raheem Sterling looks worth every penny. You know, this is a player who could prove
50
to
million
be.
Is never a bargain, Adam. But let's put it this way: if Liverpool
that's a good point.
But part of it would have been also right, and obviously, you know, he's always going to leave on a bad terms if he wants to force his move out the club. Liverpool could have sold him for more if they'd have had better terms with the player. But the fact was that it was very public that people knew that Raheem Sterling wanted to go. Whereas if it had been clubs trying to tempt him away, Liverpool would have got better value for money for Raheem Sterling.
Yeah. It was
so it's that simple.
Like the best negotiating.
So, but at that point then, people are then saying, well, you know, then he looks like reasonable value. So it's all about the perception there. And I think it's I think I'm inclined to agree, really, that actually he was worth more than 50 million. But I also think, you know, 50 million is a fair price to get for any player who's young and English.
Underpriced.
Remember, Adam, you can't buy potential.
You can't buy potential in many ways. Looking at the top 10 underpriced footballers, number two is Mapu Yanga Mbiwa, Newcastle to Roma. Dan Percy. Manchester United defender Bache.
This has got to be in percentage, okay, surely.
Question here. Okay, Van Persie. Sorry, Adam. Van Persie, you're not just paying the $4 million fee. You're paying £300,000 per week in wage. Yeah. Again, breaks their fucking report.
It's not taken into account, I assume. That's a good point, though. That is a very good point. Also featuring is Dennis Suarez, Nathaniel Clyne, Mattia Destro, Sergio Garcia, Connor Wickham, Sunderland to Crystal Palace, underpriced, apparently.
It's got to be percentage.
Gerard Deulofeu, Barcelona to Everton, and Juanmi, Malaga to Southampton. It's an interesting list at the end of the day. I mean, it created a good discussion, it created a good debate amongst us, at the very least.
I don't know about that, mate. I think that was an overpriced debate. I do think... what we're saying is that the perception of value within the league and the amount of money that's being spent right now...
Sorry, mate. I've just seen something. Emre Can is worth more than fucking David Alaba.
Well, mate, I mean, that is... I, Dave and I both know that's the truth. So this report is real. Come on, I mean, Emery Chan has a great amount of potential in there, but he's not worth more than David Alaba.
Yeah, but David Alaba's only 22.
David Alaba.
He's 1 year older and he's played for Bayern Munich and he's sick at football and he's sick at life.
I would imagine that is actually what it says on his business card.
He's sick at life.
He's sick at football. Do you want to buy him? Nah, good, thanks.
I mean, yeah, it's harsh. It's harsh on De Bruyne. It's harsh on Benteke. It's either at the price. I mean... That's interesting.
It's all within a scale, isn't it? And I do think that they're probably being weighted depending on which club they're at as well.
Should we move on to the final talking point that Dave has suggested?
Go on, Dave.
Yeah. So the transfer window was a sad one, you know, mixed. Lots of players went that didn't want to leave Man United. And I think my question to you two is, which players that left Tottenham and Liverpool did you not want to see go, but they were sold and they're off now? They're never going to come back ever again.
Can I think of...
Well, Dave, why don't you talk to us first through Manchester United, because I feel like, you know, you've got some prepared.
This has all come from Shinji Kagawa's excellent start to the season. And with Man United lacking a number 10 at the moment... that can sort of play that second striker role, that can get into the box and score. Shinji Kagawa has one of the best first touches in world football, and the lad can finish. I just don't understand why LVG got rid of him. Then there's Raphael, you know, another excellent fullback that's had his injury problems, that's gone as well. You know, Hernandez is another one. Then you look a bit earlier on, like PK leaving Manchester United, Giuseppe Rossi, then again back to the LVG era of Di Maria going and RVP going. Di Maria obviously was a difficult one, but it's a player that I loved in world football before he came to Manchester United, and I was so excited. And then it was sort of like chucked out the club, ruined, gone. Just one of those things where football, sometimes it's a sad game.
We both know what my top answer is here, right, Dave?
Yeah, I think it start with an X and end in an O.
It is. It's... XO. Xabi Alonso. Yes. Xabi Alonso should just never have left Liverpool in the first place. And the fact that at the time they were talking about replacing or moving someone into a similar position called Gareth Barry was, I think, perplexing for a lot of people. However, at the time, maybe he needed freshening up. Mascherano would definitely be another one for Liverpool. I think it's basically deconstructing that Benitez team, really, would be... Rafa Benitez, first of all, leaving the club was probably another one. Alonso, Mascherano, Torres.
What about Torres? Did you think Torres, was it the right time for Torres to leave?
Definitely the right time for Torres to leave. But I mean, had the right people remained around him, I wonder what Torres would have done. Could you also say, I mean, Andy Suarez Carroll is another one. Yeah, you know what? Andy Carroll under another manager would have been a good one. And then you probably say also... Suarez, Sterling's definitely one for Liverpool. You also feel like Robbie Fowler left Liverpool a little bit too early. Who else? No defender, anyone like that, though, really. Really, it's just players in that position. I mean, though, that's a reasonable list already, isn't it?
Yeah.
to leave Liverpool.
What about Arbeloa?
Absolutely, mate. Arbeloa was fantastic. I mean, he solved so many of Liverpool's right-back problems. And for some reason, again, Liverpool were fiending after Glenn Johnson for £17 million. Arbeloa comes at relatively little value in that time. And he became such a fantastic player. People kind of forget that. If you look at some of those picks, those are all players who have gone on to become world-class players. Mm. And essentially, they became that at Liverpool. I mean, maybe they'd have done that at whatever club, but people criticise Benitez's buying very often, but those are some fantastic players in there. Pepe Reina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically all the Spaniards are at Liverpool. Please, you should have said.
There's been quite a few for Spurs. Obviously, the obvious ones.
Ozzy Ardiles.
Gareth Bale. Oh. Luka Modric. But number one, Rafael van der Vaart.
Oh, mate.
Big fan of Van der Vaart. I think he was fantastic when he was at the club. Had a nice partnership going with old Peter Crouch there, big man, little man sort of partnership going on. Shame to have seen him leave. Andre Villas-Boas just didn't think he wasn't going to work out. That was a big shame.
If you want to play a pressing game, Rafael van der Vaart is not the guy for that.
To be fair, he's not your man, but he's a precocious talent. He scored some great goals. He was with us when we were in the Champions League all too briefly back in 2011-12. But Stephen Caulker is another one who I'd like to... I feel like we've made a bit of a mess up selling Stephen Caulker. I feel like he's going to come good in the not too distant future.
What about Jermaine Defoe?
Yeah, I mean, he was playing well at the time. We sold him to Toronto, didn't we? January, what was that, 2014 or something? He's playing well at the time, but I can't say. I don't think we missed him massively.
Lawrence, how's your job going, by the way?
I had to quit.
Did he give you too much to do, Lawrence?
Yeah, well, it was just all the gardening.
Develop the apps.
The gardening was the issue for me, and it was also the constant just saying you are amazing. Yeah, really great. It was just difficult to do.
Has Jermaine Defoe come out and discussed this?
It's very easy, really. It's low-hanging fruit, really, isn't it? I'm going to say I feel sorry for Jermaine that basically got caught advertising on a crap site.
He said, do you want to hear his response?
Go for it, yeah. Applying for the job.
Enthralling.
Sunderland striker defends personal assistant job ad. He said, the job would support my family, who have been trying to run my foundation. It's things like organising the gala dinners to try to raise funds, organising the trips to St. Lucia so I can do my charity work and get the people over there who are needed to make the whole thing run. I don't see why it's such a big deal, to be honest. I wouldn't have called it a PA because I'm not someone who would ever say, "Oh, this is my PA." But that's not to say I don't need someone to help my family do some of the things I can't.
And there's a lot of people around nodding, going, yeah, Jermaine, no one's calling what you listed there a PA, all right?
He said, I'll hold my hands up. I can't do admin or accounts or stuff like that. I need help to do that. And hopefully that help will in turn help to change lives in St. Lucia. That's my passion away from football, but I need help to do that. Am I really doing something that bad? A boy from East London trying to get on in life and do good things?
Oh, fucking hell. Give me
the
rest.
I said that I can't do this or I can't do that. But yeah, I do pack my own fridge. And yeah, I do go and get shopping where I live, most days with my girlfriend.
Oh, that coincides with a picture that he posted on Twitter this week.
Did he get
He's going shopping. Oh, bad man.
You're so down to earth, Jermaine, that what you didn't realise was that, and you are very down to earth. You see, he does seem like a nice guy, but you are so down to earth that you posted five people's jobs as one job.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I don't want to patronise you, but when you say, I'm just trying to make it, if you do want to make it, you have to speculate to accumulate. You can't just expect one other person to pick up on everything you've ever done.
He's just trying to make it, Lawrence.
It's a tough game, Lawrence.
Yeah, no, you're right, it's a tough game, but it will become harder if you do not acknowledge that you cannot have one person doing the gardening, kitchen, PA, app design, and everything else.
And wiping his arse.
Yeah, I mean, that. To be fair, it was a moment away from that. It was sheets away.
Right, let's wrap up there, guys. That was a wonderful
episode. Bizarre one.
Yeah, I think that's as good a place as any to end it. But thank you very much again for listening to the Front Three, episode 21 there. Stay tuned this Friday. We've got a special hour-long Q&A session coming out on the podcast with ourselves. They're answering all your questions. We try to get through as many as we can. But thank you for listening to this week's episode. Dave, where can the good people find more of your work?
Just on Twitter, SquawkaDave, SquawkaDave on Twitter.
And Lawrence, where can the good people find more of your work?
At Lozcast, LOZCAST, but I can't encourage people enough to follow the front three. We are very close to 1,000 followers.
We might have to do something special when we reach 1,000 followers.
Give something away, maybe. Give something away.
The way you think. I like
that. I like that.
Maybe we'll give away a pair of football boots when we...
We're not loaded,
but yeah, maybe like that.
Mate. We'll go down local sports direct, won't we?
There's no adverts on this podcast yet, if you haven't noticed. But,
There's no ads yet. Anyway, go on.
Adam,
where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood or on YouTube, The Football Republic. Probably the best football channel in the world.
Second to Lawrence.
Until then, guys, thank you very much for listening and we'll see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Cut. Bye.
See ya. Bye. See ya. Bye.